final episode of the best flipping season yet.
Yet.
On the Right Side Up podcast with Daniel Strickland and James Scholl.
And James Scholl. Yep. Hello.
Not in any affiliation or collaboration with Boundless Focus on the Family.
No, that's different. Boundless, Danielle Strickland's Boundless, very much associated, but Focus on the Family's Boundless in
not,
no way.
In any way. Nope.
We cannot be more firm about how uninvolved Focus on the Family are with this podcast. They might be upset by some of the things we say on this podcast, actually.
Well, we're just flipping everything over all the time. The Other Side of Hope is the official sponsor of this mini flipping best season ever.
What's that for those of us that have weirdly joined in episode 5 of a 5?
Well, thanks for asking, James. Nah, hey, like, it's my new book. It's out August 5th. So if this is not then, it's soon.
It's probably the day.
This is the day of my book. Okay. And basically, it is already available for pre-order. If you want to, that'd be great. If you do have the book and you've read it, and actually there's 10 free bonus chapters. If you pre-order the book, you can get 10 free bonus chapters now.
That's a lot of bonus chapters.
Yeah, just while you're waiting for the book. You get like a whole bunch of bonus chapters and you get some content from me, a story that is not in the book that you might want to know about, and like just some background stuff. It's just fun. So if you're going to get it anyway, get it now and get the bonus material.
Get more of it.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Sense. And then if not, maybe it's something that might be actually fun to check out. And if you like it, please leave a review. If you don't like it, silence is golden.
That's it. just join the legions of people that hate Danielle by email.
Actually, you know what? Leave a review if you hate it too. I think I'd like to read those. Those are kind of fun.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Actually, there's one guy that my husband really likes to listen to a lot, and he puts the worst reviews up on the back of his books.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really fun. So that, like, let's flip that over too. Go ahead. Yeah, leave your review. We'll like them both. We've been flipping over, cleansing the temple, all the flipping that Jesus did in his ministry, which there's many, but we just focused on that kind of like the other side, flipping over the temples, the
one
tables.
One story, four ways in four gospels.
Yeah, it's because there wasn't a woman writing a gospel. Otherwise, we'd have the right perspective.
Would have been a bit more synchronized. Is that?
That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
We can do a thing on the Gospel of Mary if you're interested. It's quite fun.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe later.
Do people want to hear about weird books that didn't make it in the Bible and why? Because that's a...
That didn't make it in the Bible and why. And like even like I feel like the Apocrypha itself is fascinating enough to talk about. Wow. Okay, well, guys,
that might come.
We also have a standing kind of idea that we're going to talk about God in the movies and media and Netflix shows that we love and where we're sensing. But that, who knows? That might happen.
We'll keep
that might
on
not.
Cooking on that.
And then my son Judah would really like to join in one of these discussions sometimes. Yeah. So he is kicking off his own podcast.
Ooh.
He interviewed his first episode is on feminism.
Okay. Did he interview you?
He did. And Angela Lamb.
Oh, amazing.
Interviewed us both on feminism and sometimes where people go wrong in feminism and where feminism goes wrong sometimes and like his generation. And it's fascinating.
Wow.
I'm just like, dude, keep going. Keep going.
How cool.
Yeah. So he might be another guest. But anyway, this other side of hope, basically, if we turn our lives over, there must be a framework. There must be a way that we live that creates the... something strong enough for hope to be displayed on and hope to be with us. We talked about hope being wild. We've talked about hope being where we don't look for it sometimes, like surprising. We talked about hope not being happy, but being honest and being found sometimes in the sorrow of what is rather than pretending it's not sad.
Yeah.
Hope's not found in pretending at all, I've found. It's found in being honest and authentic. So how we live those lives matter. The final gospel account we're going to read is from Luke, and it is fun. It is fun, and we're going to tell you why. So Luke at the temple.
I'm going to get James to read. I'm going to read this one, am I? Cool. It says this, then Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were selling. It is written, he said to them, my house will be a house of prayer, but you made it a den of robbers. Every day he was teaching at the temple, but the chief priests and teachers of the law and leaders among the people were trying to kill him, yet they could not find any way to do it because all the people hung on his words.
You really just slowed that down at the end there.
Got him, man. Come on. Like, you don't want to. All the people
on his
words. I was raised in churches where people like rush through this stuff. Like, and all the people hung on their words. I'm like, I feel like there's something. Yeah. I'm sure Luke wanted some dramatic effect there.
No, so. I mean, come on. Like, all the people hung
if,
on
if you're words. Not excited by all the people hanging on Jesus' words, Danielle, I'm sorry.
Driving out. I like that. That's exactly what Jesus also does to demons. Mm-hmm. He drives them out.
Yes. Like, you're looking at me like I have something to say there.
I'm just making that kind of little point. We already talked about the money stuff and the corruption stuff. We've done a fairly good deep dive on some of the cleansing. We've
into this, actually. There is a lot going on here.
Yeah. I remember preaching a couple of years ago, Luke 19, on the parables of the talents that Jesus says. And then literally he finishes telling that story. And then he begins the triumphal entry, then the cleansing of the temple. And then, like, eventually he gets taken in for questioning. And then it goes to the crucifixion. And so it's kind of like the triumphal entry, I think, signals this, like, Passion Week, basically, of like Jesus, next thing, until the final thing is death. And one of the things that always struck me when I read it through, and it just sort of seemed to be sitting in this place, like, this, the 10 talent parable is also weird because it's the opposite of what you think is going to happen. So Jesus gives the talents away. Well, he tells the story. It's a parable of a king, someone going off to be king, and he gives these people, his servants, these basically money to invest.
And we see that what's interesting is immediately after following Jesus's death and resurrection and then ascension, that is people's immediate response in Acts 2 is to not live in scarcity anymore, but to share what they have. Like, okay, here's reckless abundance. If we need to sell things to make sure everyone has enough, then so be it. But that is the reaction. And so that's almost the punchline to all of this, the kind of the parables that is the setup. And then Jesus gives us this perfect object lesson. And then the punchline is, well, of course, we're going to live in that way too. We're going to live in an abundance. We're going to live in a way that shares. It's interesting too. One of the bits in Acts, which I realize I'm diverging a lot here, when Ananias and Sapphira get blown up for not sharing. And like, that's how important that, again, I don't think they're being punished for anything other than, like, you didn't want to share. You're willing to lie about not sharing.
Keeping, like, hiding, hypocrisy. Like,
of course that way ends in death. That way ends in death all the time. And usually the difference is now it just ends in the death of someone else. If I'm not willing to share what I have, usually it's not my death that ends in it's someone else. But those ways of scarcity, they end in death. It's inevitable.
Well, and that's, I mean, it's zeal for the temple that consumes Jesus. So this is for the temple.
Yeah.
And again, we sort of make it's Jesus against the temple.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it's not. It's Jesus for the temple. But again, this scarcity idea of, like, when you think about the resources of the temple or the reason the temple exists or what the temple has, like, what is all that for? What is all that resource for? What is all that? What's the building for? Like, what's the, and you just start thinking about this, like, in light of even how we have this mentality today of, like, scarcity of, like, there won't be enough tomorrow. So, like, we better, and even, like, the whole entire corruption system of the temple sacrificial system and the money and the silver that we've all broken down, like, all of that really is rooted in not enoughness.
Yeah.
There won't be enough. We won't have enough. It really literally is like the temple doing what the first servant did. And we're just like, we're burying all of this stuff and we're going to keep it and we're going to, like, protect it because God's going to be upset with us if we don't have what it was that he gave us. And I think that, like, people have that mentality so much, even within the churches today.
And of course it's never enough. I mean, this is the whole, I remember reading there's a criticism of trickle-down economics, which is if we give enough money to rich people, then eventually it will flow down to the poor people. Yeah. And I believe one of the popes, I forget which one, said, yeah, the problem is the cup just keeps getting bigger. Mm. Like, that's it. There's never going to be enough. If you don't want to live in abundance, if you don't want to live in that world of radical generosity, there's never going to be enough. And we've seen that, right? The cup has got bigger. So in the last 2 years, there are so many more billionaires than there were. There's also so many more people living in poverty than there were. How is
yeah,
that?
And also the bill, like the space in between has grown exponentially.
Mm. Yeah.
It's unbelievable actually. and there's something really broken in it. And we know that now.
Yeah.
But that not enoughness, that scarcity, and what happens in the temple, which of course is the God of more than enough. I mean, literally, like it's the God who has all. I mean, this is Jesus. Like, why are you worrying about things that you can't, like your clothes and your, even to poor people, he's saying, why are you making this a thing?
Yeah.
And then he gets to the temple and he's like, guys, like this is not what it's supposed to look like. This scarcity, this like, I need more. I want your money. Like, all these practices that say like, and I'm sure it's for temple reform. No doubt they had a project they had to do and they were building, you know, it was a building, you know, money thing. Like no doubt it's like to build a glorious more temple. We get back to like Solomon, the whole temple was built on the backs of slaves, which, and after God was like, I don't want you to build this for me. Like, I don't even want to live in a temple. So I was thinking through this, like in light of truth telling and flipping over sort of some of those ways that exclusion happens and abuse happens and corruption happens. And in the season that we're in of a lot of this exposure coming to the whole church. And I some of the survivors that I've talked to, one of the things that's kept them quiet for so long. So some people say like, why does it take so long for a victim to speak out? And it takes a long time for obvious reasons, trauma itself. Sometimes it takes a long time for the light to come on in them because they have been told that what happened to them was not abuse. It was love, or it was right, or it was good, or God liked it, or it was for something higher than them. And I mean, just all, it kind of makes you want to puke when you think about it, but it's true. All these things are said out loud to these people for a long time.
Yeah.
And then what is put on victims is this whole idea of like, if you tell, if you tell, then it'll hurt the church.
Yeah.
It'll harm the church. Like the church might actually be harmed by the truth. The church will be harmed by the truth. That's fascinating. And like, I think what they mean by the church will be harmed by the truth is like that corrupt system might be harmed by the truth.
Yeah.
But the temple of God, the worship of God, the holiness of God, God's people, the church, that church is never harmed by telling the truth. That church is only actually that church where there's more than enough.
Yeah.
There's more than enough. That church where now there's a way made for people who need to encounter God and forgiveness and freedom. And that, you know, that's that telling even of Jesus saying like, go ahead, tear it down. I'll rebuild it.
Yeah.
You know, there's another thing. There's another way of worship. Jesus then becomes the fulfillment of that prophecy himself of like, he is the temple. He is in Christ. We have more than enough. Mm-hmm. And anytime you try to, you know, you try to make it difficult for your own sake, for others to enter, you're buying into this like, I mean, you're just not getting that the kingdom investment is for something.
Yeah.
And it's not for 30 years from now. What are you going to do if it's for right now? Mm-hmm. How will you invest everything that you've been given for right now? That's the question. Not like, how are we going to invest enough in our bank account to be around for 30 years from now?
Yeah.
That's not it.
And how much more exciting is that as well? I think that's a kind of conversation. So we're recording this in Toronto, and long story short, housing in Toronto is unbelievably expensive. And so there's lots of folks in my generation who are like, well, I can't save for a house because it's impossible. You know, there's no way. The amount that houses go up by more than my salary each year. So it's just impossible for me to ever close that gap. But it means, well, I guess I get to live a bit more freely and more generously because I'm not saving for anything. If I'm saving for something, then I can't live as abundantly and I can't be as hopefully radically generous as Jesus encourages me to be. What am I? Well, what's this money for? Well, it's not for this saving because I can't do it anyway. So, all right, let's do something with it now. And then, oh man, does cool and beautiful stuff happen when you're able to do those things.
Yeah, and what you invest in.
Yeah,
you know, what you invest in matters, and what the kingdom is like, what is Jesus's stated aim in this other flipping these tables over, right? It's inclusion, it's healing, yeah. it's yeah. hope. It's, and then one of the things in Luke that we read is that every day he's teaching at the temple. So again, this is something that he's doing and then he keeps doing.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Jesus doesn't like go away. This is one of the things I was talking on the Hagar podcast. I was doing an episode with them yesterday. And I was saying one of the great things about the Hagar story is how Jesus sends her back, which a lot of like, you know, feminist scholars or just, you know, general people who know about abuse struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because they're like, what is he doing sending her back? But in that, you know, there's nowhere else for her to survive. Number one, it's like The Walking Dead out there in that season. And then number two, it's like, she's going to be at the center of the story.
Yeah.
We're not writing her out. You can't write her out of the story.
Yeah.
And actually there's two passages where they try to send her away.
Yeah.
Because she's an inconvenient truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what she is to the people of God. And from the origin story, this is our father of faith here.
Yeah, no, it's
hilarious. This is an inconvenient truth. And God is just like, no, you will not be written out of the story. You're in it, right in the center of it. Even still, we can't figure out the end of that story. Like, we're still wrestling with what does that all mean. But what it means for sure is that radical inclusion is at the heart of God.
Yeah. 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 The marginalized don't exit stage left.
Nope. People that kingdom. You've abused and actually remind you of your own complicity and injustice, and they're not leaving the story.
No.
They're going to be at the center of it, and we're going to have to deal with this together. Like, we're going to have to sort this out together. And I love that idea of like, Jesus isn't just coming in, lighting a match, burning the temple down and walking away in slow-mo while the temple burns.
Yeah.
He's doing this for the temple.
This is it. There's no, I talk about this all the time. Jesus says, I didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. The problem is that you never, because you didn't get the law in the first place, you can't recognize what its fulfillment looks like.
Yeah, right.
It just looks wrong because your whole foundation is wrong too.
Right. You don't understand the fulfillment of the law is the worshiping. The true worship of
God. Here it is, and it is the it's the poor and the lame and the children coming, and here it is, like, see the fulfillment of the law, it's happening, and it comes by overthrowing those structures that keep those people out, and it comes by welcoming them in.
Then this last little line here I think is a really good line to maybe camp out on and then finish our series with, but the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. Yet they could not find any way to do it because all the people hung on his words. And I was thinking a couple things. Like, one, I was thinking that there is no way to kill truth. And there's literally no way to kill love. Even if you kill love, you can't, love doesn't stay dead.
Yeah.
It can't die. So, you know, there's that foreshadowing of the cross where they are eventually going to find a way to kill the man Jesus, but they can't kill God.
Yeah. How's that work out?
Like, right. So good luck with that one.
Spoiler alert, read to the end of the Gospels.
That's right. And, but also they can't find a way to kill him because the people hung on his every word. I love that idea of when truth is revealed, even at the center of things, that people like fallen, like you were just saying this in the last podcast, is like, show me the beauty of Jesus. Stop warning me of what happens without him and just tell me about him.
Yeah.
Because there's something about like when you're captured by this man, Jesus, you're like, fear leaves you. Like, it's that, you know, perfect love drives out fear. Like, even these people, to be associated with Jesus is like problematic. Like, there's some real, and I think about what it would mean for a whole bunch of people, no matter what the church context is or whatever, where truth is exposed, where things are flipped over, but there's no way to actually make it go away because people are so enthralled by the words of Jesus. Like, tell us more. Like, do more, keep talking, like, keep telling us about your kingdom, keep telling us about truth and freedom, keep healing people, like, keep loving people, because we can't leave that. This is something that we can't leave.
And can you imagine, again, being these people that forever have been excluded and also been told they're excluded because either their sins or the sins of their parents, that's the nature, that's the culture of the day. Like, well, of course you can't worship. Your grandfather did something bad. You're like, well, okay, I guess that's the way it should be. And now this fulfillment of the law comes in and he's like, no, actually, I've come to bring good news to you. Like, how exciting and beautiful. And of course they hang on your every word. It's like, why wouldn't you? I think this is working with marginalized people, which I get to do sometimes and is a real privilege to do. What's heartbreaking is like how low the bar is, honestly. Like I remember there's this organization, Dismas, who work with ex-offenders and people involved in the prison system. And we just secured a new location for our meetings. I was a bit involved with the church there, and the church, who were really great, and they said, hey, like we want to throw a barbecue for them. Like the first thing, we'll
go welcome some, barbecue. Okay,
yep. We'll throw a welcome barbecue. And we announced this at Dismas, and there was just like cheering. Like these people could not believe that someone would actually, well, you know, they're just grateful to even have a space where they're, you know, right, not going to be chucked out. Right. And one of the guys there, he came up to me afterwards and he's like, was that true? Like, did they actually want to throw us at? Like, he couldn't, like, again, he's yes. like nearly with tears in his eyes, like, cannot believe that yes. these people want to throw a barbecue for them. And again, for me, I don't know, here's me trying to throw barbecues all the time for the community. Like, my church had a barbecue at the weekend and some folks in the community came out, which is awesome and great. And we love meeting our neighbors, but most people don't care. Like, whatever, right. they're busy. Yeah, like, right. I don't know, little stuff right. to do. I'm not going to other churches' barbecues, but these folks who are not used to having barbecues thrown for them, like, what a changing thing is for them.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of, like, years ago, I went to Haiti to meet a kid that I sponsor, and Emerson, and I ended up meeting his mom, mm-hmm. Jasmine. And I asked her, like, how did this come to be? Like, how does Emerson enter into this program? Like, talk to me about your story. And she said, I was in this village, like remote village that was suffering, and literally my kids were dying. Mm-hmm. And she said, I was at like a market and I overheard these two women talking about a church that took kids in, that would like let them go to school for free, that would pay their school fees, that would. And she said, I thought to myself, I wonder if that's true.
Yeah.
Does there exist a church that will include my son who has no money and no future and no prospects and probably is going to die of hunger? So she said, I sought out to see if it was true. And it took her 2 days, 3 motorcycle rides, like walking like 30 hours or whatever. And she gets to this church and she asks to see the pastor, and the pastor's like, what do you need? And she said, is it true?
Yeah.
Does your church help poor kids?
Yeah.
And I thought about that, like, is it true? Like, and I wonder how much of that is like accompanies Jesus all the time, right? Like as the word spreads even, like, is it true that there's a teacher at the temple who actually is exposing corruption and getting rid of barriers and healing the poor and like welcoming those who aren't? Like, is it true that foreigners can come now? Like, is it true that like,
I just think that
element of like, is it true?
Yeah.
Like, and yes, it's true. And you actually can't stop that kind of truth. You can't stop that kind of, and this is what the whole thing of the early church is, that prison and jail and even martyred, like everyone's martyred.
Yeah.
Right. Except maybe John, right?
John is exiled.
Like, yeah. So like he might have made it past 60 or something. We don't know, but like everyone dies and yet it's still true.
Yeah.
And it still spreads and it's like, it's unstoppable.
Yeah.
Like the radical nature of God's inclusive love is unstoppable.
Yeah.
And that's when you get that, you can be all in.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the lack of scarcity. Like, not only is this true, but it's unstoppable. Like that nothing can stop this. And we were talking before and I was reminded of a friend of mine, that showed me this YouTube clip of Winnie Mandela. So this is the ANC was like basically annihilated by the apartheid government, and they're like all the leaders are in jail. Winnie Mandela has already been tortured for almost 2 years or almost a year straight. And then she's been exiled at her own expense, by the way. She had to pay her own expenses. I mean, it's like, it's just like oppression sucks, man. Anyway, so she's exiled to like the farthest reaches of the court. Like, you know, you're doing something when you're like exiled that far. And a BBC reporter sneaks in to interview her. And he says, he has her on film. He says, so it's not looking good, huh? Like basically her kids have been orphaned now. Mm. She's been tortured. Her husband's in jail. All the leaders of the ANC have been rounded up. Like it's a mess. Mm. And she literally looks into this camera, like straight into the camera, unflinching. And she said, it's never looked better. No one can stop an idea whose time has come. Mm. And that's a quote by somebody else. It's like a famous poet. No one can stop an idea whose time has come. But she just looks in the camera and says it with unflinching. And it's that. It's like nobody can stop this kingdom come.
Yeah.
Nobody can stop this. Like, this is what Mary prophesied, right? Yeah, even when Jesus like is being formed inside her, is like, oh wow, it's come.
This is
like,
this is the kingdom's
here, right? Yeah. And there is no, like, I'm just a tiny little piece of this, but like, this thing's bigger than me. This is why Stephen's face lit up like an angel when he was like on his way out. Cause he's just like, oh, I see.
Yeah.
There's no way to stop this. Yeah. Like, even my life, like, you can take my life and it won't. And this is Jesus. You can take my life. Right? I'll just destroy this whole temple. It'll be rebuilt. There is no stopping this kingdom from coming. And when you get that, I think you get that, like, okay, I'm all in.
Yeah.
all in. And it's not this measured. I mean, we were talking before about Jesus, like, he's young.
Yeah.
And how many people would say, like, maybe this isn't the right, like, maybe hold some back. Chill out
for 10 years. You know, you're new to this. Hey, you've only been doing ministry
three years now. Like, just like, there's like,
feels maybe a bit much.
Wait a bit. Like, you know, we've got, and like, spend it slowly and, you know, like, nope, all out.
Full out.
All out. I'm all in. I'm going to show you what to do with the investment given to you. Spend it.
And show you that even, again.
Spend it on the poor. Spend it on inclusion. Spend it on the truth. Spend it on life.
Yeah. And again, Jesus kind of leveraging that bit of privilege he has, turn over the temple. You go, okay, the disabled will never be able to turn over these tables. I'll do it.
Yeah.
The poor would never be able to like chase out the doves. I'll do it. Like that. Right. I love that too.
Who can stand in the temple and speak truth to power? I can. So, okay, then I'll do it.
Yeah, then I'm going to do it. Yes. And they're going to hate me for it. And it's worth it. Yes. Like, this is,
it's worth it. Because what else are we going to do? And what is it for, people? What's it for? What are all the reserves for? What is all the money for? What's all the reputation for? What's all the privilege for? Yeah. It's for the kingdom. It's for the poor. It's for the oppressed. It's for those who feel excluded. It's for the silence. It's for the marginalized. This is what it's for. And this is Jesus living his best life and showing us how to live in such a way that our lives are fully poured out in self-giving love. It's always a challenge to me. It's always challenging to me. I hope that this series, this flip side, the flipping best season yet.
Still haven't quite nailed it. It's the very end. We still haven't.
and the four gospel accounts of Jesus flipping things over. And then this, of course, sponsored by The Other Side of Hope, which is flipping hope over and looking at the framework of our lives. I do spend some time on some of the best lessons I've learned, the people I've learned them from. I talk a little bit about true humility, which we haven't mentioned, but is evidence in everything Jesus does. You know,
I make notes about that too. Yeah, that's a really good point.
just like never trying to be what he isn't and never shrinking back from who he is.
Yeah.
There is this beautiful spot in humility called agreeing with God about who you are.
Mm.
And if you don't read that early on account of Jesus' baptism where the Father speaks over his life, you are loved, you're my joy, you're the pride of my life. This value that Jesus carries with him into everything else he does, which is why he can handle the disappointment of other people. And he can handle the pressure and he can handle, you know, he can push back against people trying to make him someone he's not because he knows who he is. Yeah. And the final, even the Last Supper before, well, it depends on what gospel you're reading, but the Last Supper where Jesus, it literally says, because Jesus knew who he was and where he was going, he took off his rabbinical robe and took the towel of a servant. It wasn't out of trying to please or prove something. It was out of assurance and security and true humility that Jesus could serve.
Yeah.
Which is the same for us, right? And then we talk about true dependency, which is like getting to the place where we agree with God about who he is.
Yeah.
And we see this in Jesus too. It's not up to me. There's something greater than me going on in the world and I'm surrendering to this great power of love and God. And so there's this beautiful posture. So I talk a little bit about that posture that was just like game changing for me as a young up and coming leader. I call it the posture of peace. Mm-hmm. And making these, and peace being this like fullness of something is true humility, true dependency. Talk a little bit about developing a posture framework. So a little bit on infinitum, my own practice, my daily practice, weekly practice, monthly practice that keeps me right sized.
Which you can join us on, by the way, if you want to join the infinitum
prayer days and the website infinitumlife.com. Check it out if it's helpful to you. We have a couple of ways you can join in, like the 30-day challenge. Mm-hmm. If you just want to grab a friend and do like your best 30 days. I've had some people, next generation kids, who have said to me, do you mind if I ask a friend who doesn't follow Jesus if they want to try it for 30 days? And I'm like, yes, that's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
So that's a cool, maybe you have a friend who wants to just give it a go following Jesus and try it for 30 days and then have a conversation about how that went and if they might like that in their lives. And so that's something, if you want to buy the book, The Other Side of Hope, it is available.
Hooray.
Yay. And yeah, I'm praying it's going to be helpful. And I'm praying that God will give us all the courage and the humility and the honesty and the surrendered posture that would enable us to flip everything over and live a different way.
Now's the time.
Come on, people. All right, thus concludes the best flipping season yet.